Turn up that Wampus Cat. Get it up there. Wampus Cat, get up there like you're on radio, son.
This is right. The Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working?
Yeah.
Randy?
Yeah.
Can you feel it, Davi?
I can feel it. My brain is boiling like a crucible, and all the crud is riding to the top to be scraped off and shucked.
Nice. Yeah.
I'm just, this is Michael Dean. I'm just going to read the crucible while you guys talk tonight. I'll read it out loud. It's a good, one of those libertarian books. You know, it's about lib pair.
Is it?
We should,
I thought it was about
also
like the
mention,
witch trials or something.
It is. We should also mention the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. Right, Michael?
Yeah, man. I'm looking at an electrical storm out the window. This might be the last show I ever do. You know, on my 50th birthday, lightning struck a tree in our backyard, like 30 feet from where I was sitting. It's pretty intense.
But there you go. Short.
So we're reading this really square thing that Davi turned us onto. It's Brian Kaplan's Libertarian Purity Test. If you search Google Libertarian Purity Test, it comes up. First of all, Brian Kaplan is a college professor at George Mason University in Washington, D.C. So how much of a libertarian can you be and live in Washington, D.C.? Although Davi had a good point. What is it?
I believe in open immigration, so libertarians should be free to live within Washington, D.C.
Are they free, though? Are they free to be libertarians after they've moved there, though?
No. Probably lives in Arlington now. Most people in D.C. do. All right. So the thing is, it's all we questions, first of all. Like, should we abolish welfare? Like, it's not really libertarian.
Yeah, I answered the spirit of the question, not the letter of the question on that one.
And then the other thing is,
I can't abolish taxes. I don't charge anybody any taxes.
Yeah, like, are taxes too high, yes or no? Like, I have a problem with that question. There shouldn't even be taxes. Now, Davi, you said you have a problem with the BIPCOT no government license. What is it?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. So the BIPCOT no government license says that a piece of information is licensed and free to use by anyone except government. But then I was thinking, like, who does that mean? Does that mean, like, if a police officer or I guess a human being with a badge on his chest comes up to you and says, hey, I want to use that thought, you got to say, no, sorry, man, you work for government. But he's also just a human being. So the act of sort of banning government use also sort of acknowledges the existence of government.
Yeah, well, the license,
like, can't that
actually,
cop do it in his private capacity? Like,
well, the license actually specifically bans governments or people who work for governments, but it doesn't specify if it bans them in their off time. And I kind of left that ambiguous on purpose, along with, you know, like, okay, is someone who is a mechanic who only services the post office's vehicles or something, you know, like, he's not paid directly by the government. So, and basically it expands to, like, it's kind of a thought experiment. Like, pretty much everybody works for the government in some way. And then someone else pointed out, if you pay income tax, you work for the government.
Yeah. So yeah. I had the same idea about
the government.
The idea that it's not a violation of the non-aggression principle to say graffiti or mural the front of a courthouse or to joyride in a police car, because these things are public property.
The things are getting closer and closer. Like, I took a month off and I came back and you guys are like, all right, so I've got this federal judge tied up in the back of my trunk.
Who is that a violation?
No,
is that a violation of the
non-aggression
principle?
Michael, it's not a federal judge. It's just a fat man in a muumuu, okay? Like, it's not that big a deal.
I'm going to go. You guys are going to get me thrown. Have fun in Gitmo, guys.
Right, okay. And it's not kidnapping. It's homesteading the fat man in the muumuu.
Yeah, if you feed him and, you know, you're responsible for his health and well-being.
No, but I'm going to put forward a principled argument that you actually cannot joyride in a police cruiser without violating the non-aggression principle. Here's why. That argument is premised on the idea that the cruiser is public property, and that public property is not owned, and therefore it is available for homesteading. Like, that's generally, that's the argument for taking control or stealing or using public property.
Is all but government essentially exploitation of the productive members of society for the benefit of a parasitic or ruling elite? This sounds like an anarcho-communist question, but go ahead. But it
here's
goes along
the thing.
With what Davi's saying.
That police officer, in a philosophically consistent universe, is not distinct from any other human being, which means he's already homesteaded that cruiser. He's not a police officer in a police cruiser. He's a human being in a car. And you can't joyride in what is obviously someone else's car.
You can. No,
hey,
you can't.
He's
unwittingly homesteaded the car. That's my point. Even if he doesn't know it.
On this test. It says, I got 160 points, and it says, perfect, the world needs more like you. What did you get, Davi?
I got the same thing. It's the Lysander Spooner's at the bottom, right?
Yeah. He's probably there no matter what you get, I think.
Oh, well, I don't know. I'm only me. As soon as I figure out how to be more than one person, I'll let you know.
I don't need a test to tell me how libertarian I am.
I know. Well, you know,
so
that's
my thing. You can't assume.
World's smallest political quiz. I'm off the charts, literally, on that. Like, I don't fit in that diamond.
Well, have you seen my world's even smallest political quiz?
No.
Is it the two-question one?
It's one question. Says, do you need a king? And if it says, if you check yes, you're a slave. And if you say no, you're an anarchist. So
you could also have an essay version of that. It should be, you know, do you think we should abolish kings? And the answer would be, if you wrote anything other than I don't agree with your use of the word we, sir, then you're a tyrant.
Yep, I'm an anarcho-semanticist.
Is that the free market version of a word Nazi? Or grammar Nazi?
Yes, it is. I do not believe in the hierarchy of grammar, and I refuse to submit to it.
You know, I want to know you guys' opinion on the Harvard comma? No, the Oxford comma. I'm a fan of the Oxford comma.
Know.
Are you guys?
I have no idea. I've read this a few times,
really?
And I cannot
so
seem
unclear.
To retain the information. For me, okay. A comma is a pause. If I want the reader to pause there, I'll put a comma there.
Okay, so here's the thing. The Oxford comma, for people who don't know, is putting an extra comma before and in a list. Like if you say, tonight's show is going to be Davi, comma, James, comma, Randy, comma, and Michael. That last comma before the and, if that's there, it's the Oxford comma. If it's not, you don't like the Oxford comma. Now, it comes in really useful with some things to avoid confusion. Like the example I've heard is, the author thanked her parents, Ayn Rand, and God. And like without the Oxford comma, her parents are named Ayn Rand and God. But with the Oxford comma, she's thanking her parents and thanking Ayn Rand and thanking God.
That's Bob a good likes point. Macaroni and cheese, comma, and bondage and sadomasochism.
Yeah. Well, bondage and sadomasochism,
right?
Can be two things or one thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. I have a lot of confusion when a list contains things which are paired and contain their own and. I don't know what to do in that scenario.
Well, BDSM, the acronym BDSM is this, I've never seen anything
boycott,
like it.
Boycott, divestment, and sanctions, right?
It's basically, it's a cluster of separate things. It's bondage, discipline, sadism, and masochism, but it's also bondage, discipline, dominance, and submission, sadism and masochism. I don't know. There's like five clusters of how that could be spelled or like interpreted.
Yep. It sounds like LGBT, you know, that where the people just keep adding on letters to it.
Anarchist,
atheist, if somebody comes up with a new gender identity, they just add a letter.
Man, you know, here's the thing, like all this stuff about like hyperfeminism and man-hating and cisgender and white privilege and male privilege. I literally wasn't aware of any of this until about 4 months ago. I think it was until MK Lords got on the show. Maybe
you were
it was more than 4 months ago. I was. I mean, I knew they were angry feminists. I actually read the Scum Manifesto in the 80s, the Society for Cutting Up Men, written by Valerie Salinas, who actually shot Andy Warhol once because he was a man. Didn't kill him.
You know, that's what he gets. Serves him right for the circumstances of his birth.
Yeah, but I wasn't aware like of all the latest hubbub, and now we have this new host who's Diana Davidson, who is an anti-feminist female, which is a kind of interesting thing. Although I think that all of our female co-hosts are kind of, they're definitely not traditionalist women, and they're kind of anti-feminist feminists, maybe? I don't know. I know MK Lord, like, Lords writes a lot of stuff making fun of feminism.
Yeah.
Does that make you not a feminist if you make fun of feminism? I guess you'd have to clarify what actual feminism is.
I make fun of anarchists all the time. I don't think that's a good standard.
Hey, Davi, as a button manufacturer, are you aware of a button company called Ephemera Buttons?
No.
They used to do, like, rack jobbing, like, you know, a lot of head shops and record stores used to have a rack, like one of those spinny racks, you know, of buttons. Yeah. And they just bring the rack in and they replace the rack when they sell them. And I actually sold them two button ideas in like 1987 that they made and manufactured. And they paid me $25 for each one. And the first one said, "I'll be grateful when they're dead." And the second one said, "Any man who claims to be a feminist is just trying to get laid." And those buttons have been around forever. Like, you can still buy them.
Wow.
And I wrote them. Yep.
Groovy.
But yet the Grateful Dead is still doing shows despite the fact that they are dead. I don't even know how that works. So
I've seen them 9 times. How many times have you guys seen them?
I've never seen the Grateful Dead.
I went one time. That was enough.
You know, the picture for tonight's show, the episode, is going to be a picture of Randy high on LSD back in 1868 when he was 17 playing guitar behind an American flag.
You're going to keep the American flag in there, I hope.
Of course I am.
All right.
I wouldn't alter that. I don't want
to
hide your past.
That to me.
I'm not going
to
hide your past. No, now, fake anarchist would, like, set the flag on fire. The real anarchist, like, leaves the flag in to show how square Randy used to be while he was tripping on acid in the 1800s.
You know, that picture, the reason the flag is there is that my band and me, we were playing the VFW hall.
Playing a frat, I know. I used to play VFW halls. I was in this band. It was when I was like 18, I played bass with a band. It was like me and 70 to 80-year-old men and women. And the band was called Three Old Goats and a Kid. And we used to go play jazz standards at the VFW hall for tips.
I used to wear the American flag as a handkerchief and use it to blow my nose. That was during my Hunter S. Thompson phase.
Ew. Blowing nose. Ew. A lot of punk shows were in VFW halls because they would actually rent them out to anybody.
You dirtied your nose with it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
You know what this song is called? It's called "Would You Tar and Feather a Tax Collector?" I wrote it.
Would you?
But would you?
I can't answer that, but I can say this.
An Archo is the strongest man in the world.
That's some kind of sexy.
Yeah. Michael, there's no reason for you to hide your feelings because you're the only one here that gives out their address at the beginning of every show.
Yeah, it's I live in Keene, New Hampshire, right across the street from Ian Freeman.
No, Podbay 2A, Michael.
An Archo communist Sicily and have the logic of tiny, small, little Jurly man children.
Yeah. I just gave out Chris Cantwell's address, actually. No, he moved, I think. So what's up, guys? What do you want to talk about?
Is that right?
I think we need to put Krizzle up to buying a button machine that makes larger buttons.
I think it's time. Davi, how about if you and I buy a button machine?
Can we give it to Krizzle for, like, maybe we could negotiate some discount with him if we buy his equipment? What do you think?
Well, I wonder if button machines can have different size presses in the same press.
I've owned them before, and mine didn't. It was like a die, and I suppose it's possible you could, like, have a buckle or something on the machine and change the die or whatever, but I think I'd rather have just multiple machines. So
are you talking about, like, the hand press, like old-fashioned kind, or is there like a new automated button.
I think that's still machine. The standard, the hand one. Yeah, that's what I had.
It's for people with too much time on their hands.
It's very time consuming.
Yeah, but see, I'm not one of those people, either. And Krizzle rocks them out. So I kind of like, I would almost like buy him a machine.
I know.
If he would sell me buttons with it.
I wonder if he has people like employees that press it for him.
I don't know.
Wow.
Can we outsource this to Bangladesh or
a two and a quarter inch?
You can,
machine.
But it's 1,000 button minimum to have them made in China.
Well, this is $239 for a. We don't need 2 1/4 inch, right?
Whatever the next standard unit is, I don't know what it is, because his are technically 1 1/4. They're not actually an inch.
No, they're.
I think that's to account for rounding.
I would almost think like even 1.5 inches or 1 3/4 inches would be good. Because really, the thing is like 2 or 3 inch buttons. Like 3 inch buttons are kind of too obnoxious to wear. You know, they really look like political buttons.
2 inch buttons are kind of pushing it too.
I know. I'm thinking 1 3/4 inch.
Well, that's the other crazy thing. Like, I mean, you have to remember we're talking about diameters, right? So a 1 inch, but the difference between a 1 inch button and a 2 inch button is actually 4 times the size, not 2 times the size.
Well, and do you think 1 1/2 inches would be enough? Like, the thing is, just some of the artwork we make is a little complex to really read well at 1 1/4 inches. What do you think as a button guy? Do you think we want to go to 1 1/2 inches or 1 3/4 inches?
I would do 1 3/4 inches.
Okay, here's a 1 3/4 inch button maker. Man, let's see. Now it's on Etsy. I don't want to buy it on Etsy. This is radio. This is what we do on Syndicated Radio. I mean,
we shop online.
This is a conversation. This is a conversation that Davi and I would easily have not on radio, too. I don't know. If you guys want to, I'll look at button stuff if you guys want to talk about something else.
Because this is visual humor. Talk about it. You know?
This is visual humor on the radio.
It's not really visual humor. I don't know.
It's visual non-humor on the radio. That's worse.
It's not humor. Yeah, it's not visual.
Not even funny.
But it is radio. And if nothing else, you can say we are radio.
Oh, here's a company called buttonsonline.com, and they have a video showing their button maker being used. Davia, like this. It looks like it's about an 8-year-old boy using it. So these are the button makers for child labor. We like that.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
James uses
I got kids. They need work.
They need work. How many kids you got? I know about 2 of them.
Two.
Okay.
Two.
9
two girls.
And 15, right?
James, are you doing 3D printed stuff for Porkfest this year again?
Yeah. Well, yes. Yes. Me and Dorothy have been working on it. And Violet's in on the action, too, now. So it's now a little minor family business. So, yes.
Babco. Bab and Daughters.
Have you seen the Liberator pins that I had Derek do?
You posted a picture of it. I'd like to see one up close and see.
They're pretty snazzy.
Well,
I'll have them in Porkfest. I'll show them to you. I'm stoked about them because what I really wanted and what I couldn't seem to find somebody who could do until Derek would do it was to do a 2-color version of it. And the first people I approached were not doing that for some reason. They just stopped returning my emails.
We just got our dual extruder now to do. So our next task is mastering multiple colors printed at the same time instead of
that's
like
cool.
We can do layers, but now we can do intertwining colors.
Is that a break? That seems early.
Yeah. No, that's coming up.
I can't believe they're going to interrupt our online shopping.
I know. Okay, Davi, it's $229 for what we need.
Work.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Worms.
Yeah.
Or in this case, fungus.
Parasites. Ants.
Parasites.
So James Babb has a new analogy for statism. Now, for those who don't know, like on the radio, it's entirely possible people don't know what we mean by statism. Statism is love of the state. It's love of the government. It's anything when people say, what we need to do, and that usually means what the government needs to do and point guns at people's heads to get done, is. And statism is bad, and it leads to, you know, I mean, it leads to what we have now.
Destructive behavior.
It, you know, and the end game of it is either Nazi Germany if you want something that didn't last, or, you know, North Korea if you want something that's lasting and thriving. So that's statism. We don't like statism. So what's your analogy for statism, James?
Well, I had a, you know, since we've got Davi on and he's an expert on zombies, I thought this might be something good and to ask Bitcoin. Him about. I was reading about these ants in the Amazon that they live their life normally, but if they come across a certain fungus spore, it infects their body and their brain changes, and the spore actually reprograms the ant to serve the fungus. And the this ant, now for the first time, will leave its normal habitat, go to an entirely new part of the tree, clamp on with its mandibles to the underside of a leaf, and die, and the fungus will sprout from the dead ant and then continue its life cycle. And I thought, you know, statism kind of has a similar effect. Like, you really wonder, like, why are people doing this self-destructive behavior? You know, like, what could it be? You know, we try, like, all this education, and we do radio shows, and write books and articles and talk to people. But I thought,
buttons,
what if we're...
And we make buttons.
Yeah. What if there's no amount of buttons that's going to save the world, but it's actually what we need is a good fungicide. Like, it's actually a brain fungus that is causing statism.
It's like people have this, like, natural state of being, but then they encounter this fungus, and it causes them to, like, leave their natural habitat and go into a voting booth, like, once every 4 years, sometimes even once a year, and do deliberate harm to themselves.
Right. It's completely inexplicable, right? Add a brain fungus, and suddenly it might make sense, right?
And there are brain funguses, and we're going to get into that brain fungi. And we are a bunch of fungi, so we're going to talk about this. Here's what I'm thinking. If there are any amateur or professional DNA scientists out there, Kevin McKernan, I'm looking your way, people that we know, here's what I think someone should do. Kevin won't do this. Kevin owns publicly traded companies. He can't do what I'm about to say, but somebody might know someone who could. Kevin was like... You know Kevin? Do you guys know Kevin? Kevin's a friend of ours. That, like, we brought him to from like Ron Paul Light to anarcho-capitalism, the Fiends did. And he is a he owns a couple DNA companies that are publicly traded, and he was part of the Human Genome Project. He was honored at the White House for his contributions in that. So we have people that can do everything. So what I'm thinking somebody, not him, but somebody should do. And this would be before you make the brain fungus that's going to cure statism. Now they're going to kick in my door because they're thinking we're going to talk about biological warfare. We're not. We're just, this is a thought
experiment. It's just a metaphor. You know what a metaphor is.
It's a metaphor. It's a town outside New Orleans.
Right. It's a fiendicide.
So here's what I'm thinking would be like something leading up to that as practice is splice the DNA of dandelions and really good marijuana. So you make marijuana that is a weed that's as unstoppable as dandelions. Like, marijuana is a weed, but it's not a weed the way dandelions are. So if somebody could make marijuana that is so unstoppable like dandelions, to the point where it's growing in everybody's yard in the world, it would kind of defeat the purpose of it being illegal.
Could you cross it with a dandelion? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Somebody should work on this.
How about arugula? I think arugula, because then you could put it on a salad.
How about,
I don't like dandelion greens as much, but I dig arugula. So,
I mean, really, yeah, how weed is a weed. Hence the name. So,
weed is a weed, but it's not a weed the way that dandelions are. They're just everywhere, man.
If you really want to, like, overgrow the government, then what you would need to do is you'd need to splice all sorts of other plants to just have the THC component of marijuana, so that it,
what
like
about
maybe
pigeons?
Dandelions contain
what if you
THC,
made pigeons
maybe arugula
psychedelic
does.
Because pigeons are kind of the weeds of the air. If you made pigeons that you could smoke.
What, you got to eat them? I don't want to eat them.
Do you eat a lot of pigeons?
Smoke pigeon? Their feathers. Smoked squab.
Cross it with
okay, James, tell us about the ant fungus. I'm looking at this picture and I want to vomit, so tell me about it.
Well, this ant is fascinating because it really does, you know, become a different creature. It is hijacked by this fungus. And I'm thinking, you know, people could be, maybe like the fact that we're anarchists just means we haven't been infected or we have some natural immunity to this brain fungus.
And there's like one of Davi's books. Don't you have a book about this, Davi?
Well, yeah, I have a book on zombies,
Don't you have a zombie pathogen in one of your books that only affects statists?
Yeah. So, well, I'm basing mine on toxoplasmosa, which usually infects cats and mice. Mice too. Stories like The Last of Us is a video game, or The Girl with All the Gifts is a novel, and those are based on a fungus-based zombie, which is, like, honestly, these authors are inspired by this ant, the same way that I am inspired by toxoplasmosis. It's taking an existing disease and saying, hey, you know, that kind of sounds like zombies. What if that's the explanation for zombies?
So it's literary biomimicry? Is that what you're doing?
Yes. Nice. Precisely.
I love it.
The Last of Us is a video game, but it's one of the most terrifying zombies I've ever seen in any genre. Because, like, in the beginning, it's just like a human that's hijacked, and it goes out and bites other people to spread the infection. But after the human has been infected long enough, it turns into what's called a clicker, which means that its head explodes in this big, like, array of funguses, and suddenly the only way that it can navigate is through audio location, so it clicks and gets like a sonar picture and goes and hunts that way.
Well, there is actually a fly that hijacks an ant as well, but in a slightly different way, where it lays its larvae in the ant, and these little larvae eventually congregate in the brain of the ant, and they just feed and feed and feed and feed until literally the head of the ant does explode in a and the flies come out of it. So that's highly plausible.
So get this, toxoplasmosis is a parasite, and it reproduces in the intestines of a cat. And so it excretes its larva in the feces of the cat, which is then ingested by a mouse, and then it gets into the mouse's brain, and it changes the behavior of the mouse to make it attracted to the cat so that the cat can easier eat it and ingest it and complete the reproductive cycle of the parasite.
Fascinating. I mean,
it's totally bizarre.
It's absolutely fascinating, and you see this over and over again in nature. So is it really that much of a stretch to think that human beings could be influenced by something, by an infection, by some type of brain parasite? Because seriously, how do you explain Bernie Sanders? You know, like, how do you explain Rick Santorum? Like, there has to be some explanation for how these people can get support in the world and do what they do.
It really does seem like a mental Konos disorder sometimes.
Klang. It's Konos and Klang, man. Kang. You ever seen that Simpsons?
Hey, don't blame me. I voted for Kodos.
Yeah. We are exchanging long protein strings. If you have a better idea of how to do it than holding hands, we'd love to hear it.
I'm not familiar with this episode.
It's where these two like hideous writing. Space aliens come down and take over the bodies of who is it, like Al Gore, and who did he run against back in the day? Mondale, I think.
George Bush.
Yeah, I forget who it was, but it was some Democrat and Republican from when this was made back in the 80s. And
probably one of the best Simpsons skits of all time.
Yeah, and then there's the Futurama one where you've got the two politicians who are literally clones of each other running against each other, John Jackson and Jack Johnson.
Don't let their identical DNA fool you.
Yeah. Ron Paul and Ponrol.
My opponent's titanium tax goes too far. Well, my opponent's titanium tax goes not too far enough.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah.
I would like to reiterate everything the other candidate has said. Why not? Why isn't it possible that Like, because here's the thing, like, toxoplasmosis doesn't, like, there's no symptoms in a human being until they're heavily infested. Dead. And some people think this explains, like, crazy cat lady syndrome.
Lungworm.
But they say that 90% of the population carries it, and it just has no effect on human beings, right? So if human beings can carry, if there can be a disease or a parasite or a fungus that is proliferated that widely in the human species and doesn't express any known symptoms and is relatively undiagnosable, why couldn't that be what government is? Like, literally. Like, why couldn't
or,
it be that?
Think about this, though.
A mental disorder caused by an infection.
It could also be affecting your brain to think that the other people around you that are infected are normal, right? So it does have symptoms. It's just that people are also infected. They look at that person and say, well, they're just being normal, like I am. So yeah, it's like a built-in cloaking mechanism that prevents its own detection.
Davi, I think I just figured out that you're not saying toxoplasmosis. Am I right?
No, it's toxo. It's T-O-X-O-P-L-A-S. Plasmosis. Okay. Plasmosa. Yeah.
That's very different. Okay, go ahead.
What did you think I was saying?
Talk show plasmosis.
I love it.
That's the title. That's the title of this episode. I'm writing it down. Ding, 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 ding. Talk show plasmosis. Who came up with that? I was shopping for button makers. I missed that one.
That was Randy.
Randy.
That's good, Randy.
You could have it, Michael.
No, it's the Fiends Collective. It's the Fiends Capitalist Collective.
That's great. Davi usually has the best bone moats, so thank you. I got one.
If a zombie ant was climbing a tree and he happened to pass another zombie ant climbing the same tree, he wouldn't look over at him and say, hey man, what are you doing? Get back with the hive. Like, they would just climb the same tree, right?
I think they'd let him go.
Well, you know, but it like the fly parasite that I talked about, that it makes the ant head explode, that actually makes the ant leave the community of other ants. So when it hatches, it's not attacked by the other ants. So there's a lot of that kind of, you know, recognizing other types of other infected people. And in fact, some of these funguses are so, I can't say the word smart, but so well evolved that they don't even release their spores unless the right type of ant comes by. I mean, they're just so well adapted.
And we're going to the free market of ants. We'll be back.
And funguses.
Have this trip to the fungal market. I just had my house tested for fungus. It doesn't have any.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends. Yes, we're back from the market. Hey, we were going to talk about Porkfest for a few minutes, since that's coming up starting, the 20th of June. Is that right, Jim?
I think it's the 21st.
21st. And you're going
June 21st.
And you're going to be there.
I am. And I understand you're going to be there and Davi's going to be there.
Yes. Yep. And there'll be some other fiends that are going to be there also, if I recall. Is Diana Kyler? Is Diana going to be there?
I don't know. I haven't heard the list. Maybe Lou will come again. I know Lou, Derek will be there.
Yeah, Derek is. I don't think Lou can make it this year, unfortunately.
I don't think Lou. Oh, here, I have the list. It's Davi, me, Derek Freeman.
MK is going to be there.
Yep.
MK Lords and Chandler St. Pierre.
Nice.
Going to be there. So that's a bunch. That's seven of us. And hey, I'm looking at the Porkfest schedule. And Jim, you're going to do a show or two, aren't you? When you're
if needed, I'm certainly going to be around, and you know why not?
Well, I think we need to get your name on the list there so that at least your fans will show up. Both of them. The live show. Yes. Hey, don't. It's not funny. That's more than I have. Okay.
No, it's too late for my kids to stay up. So my fans, you know, are gonna be asleep.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. You should be on there if you're going to be there. And also, I'm looking at it. Davi has his nice picture with his chin beard on there, and then there's one of me looking old, and Derek looking friendly, but Diana has to get hers and MK and Chandler to get theirs up there.
I don't know I don't know who's in charge of that or.
Well, I think you go to the scheduling software and sign up with an account, and then I had to email the event coordinators, a nice person named Amy, and she hooked the bio up to the Freedom Fiends event, and then it showed up there. So
nice.
Give it a shot. Dobby's already there. You don't have to do anything, Dobby. You must have been on there from last year or something, right?
I'm not sure.
He's honestly, just that cool.
How I got up there.
Well, he's you're just there. That cool. You're there. Yeah. Well, and he's not only there, but he's at the top. Although I suspect he's there because his last name starts with a B, because it goes Barker, England, Freeman, and so on. So I'm thinking
Bab will be put in front of everybody. I'm going to jump to the front of the line.
You will jump to the top of the line. You better get on that, Jim.
But I was going to say, what about the listener? The listeners might not know what Porkfest is. I know it comes up fairly often, but
you've been there, so tell us.
This is the Porcupine Freedom Festival in Lancaster, New Hampshire. And if you want to come and hang out with a couple thousand libertarians, anarchists, leave me alonists, voluntarists, whatever people call themselves, it's people just basically living free for a week, trading with Bitcoin or silver. Not really caring about what's going on in the rest of the world. It is it's a wonderful opportunity to just enjoy a week of no cops, no checkpoints, no red light cameras. It's a good time, and people come from all over the world, literally. So it's a great opportunity to just come and hang out with more anarchists and have fun.
No red lights either. And there's all kinds of stuff this is my first one. I haven't been in there, but I've been looking at the schedule because this is the first one I'm going to be at. And it seems like there's every hour you can go to something that's like a lecture or a program where you'd learn something about liberty, or there'll be something, a do-it-yourself thing, like how to know how to make everything that you need. Or
oh, yeah, there's like all kinds of...
How to shoot and stuff like that.
Right, there's entertainment, there's food events, yes. There's lectures, there's family events, there's shooting events, there's hiking. You can do anything. And this schedule app is great. You can go through, you see everything, you make your own schedule. So, you know, I fill it up, and then as the day goes on, I get a schedule of all the stuff I'm not going to go to because I'm busy stopping and talking to other people. So,
Worms. We'll be back with more in hour two after this trip to the market.
Worms.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. and make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CatMuff, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CatMuff, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. This is a reminder that Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Find out more at BIPCOT.org. So, how's it going? I hear there are some other interesting people coming to Porkfest. Rumors,
yeah,
comments, hearsay?
Yeah, it's not official yet, but I have inside sources that tell me that Bernard von Nothaus of the Liberty Dollar fame will be a guest speaker at Porkfest this year, which I'm really excited about.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be, I guess he'll be doing some talks, just telling his story. And for those that don't know, he's the creator of the Liberty Dollar, which is a private currency based on gold and silver. Mostly people use it that I knew just had the actual silver. He doesn't even use the word coin because evidently that's some kind of legal term. But I use the
word
coin because it's a coin.
The government has copyrighted the word coin.
Right. But they're coins. Okay. So they coined it. Yeah. They can't coin that term. So, anyway, he created this really successful private currency, and there millions of dollars were in circulation.
What a scoundrel!
In addition to the actual silver and gold coins, he had warehouse receipts that you could also get, where we could exchange larger quantities without having this heavy weight. And these receipts were redeemable for actual gold and silver. And they were independently audited and verified. It's actually sitting in a safe, and which ultimately became the weakness because the Fed started looking at this going, he's got millions of dollars of precious metals there. Can we just take that? And they can.
What they did.
So they did.
Yeah. Were these warehouse receipts, were these sort of like von Nothaus reserve notes or something? Or
they were Liberty Dollar basically. Warehouse receipts. And very professionally done. I'm sure they would be extremely difficult to counterfeit. And they were, and you could circulate them. I had friends giving them to me. We would exchange them amongst ourselves. It was sort of kind of the excitement before Bitcoin about using an alternative currency and getting businesses to adopt it. It was kind of a similar excitement that I recall in the early 2000s. And it was widely successful. It was huge. People were loving it. So they said, well, wait a minute. This might be a threat to our money monopoly. What can we do? So they said, hey, you know, those silver coins that are an ounce of silver, they said, that kind of looks like a quarter. That could confuse people. So we're charging you with counterfeiting. And they charged him and with counts of this actual crime. They called it similitude. They're like, hey, we realize, of course, that your solid ounce of silver is worth 40, 50, 60 times, depending on when it was, what a quarter would be worth. But, you know, it kind of looks like a quarter. So we're going to send you to jail.
Except that it's worth, even if it was the size of a quarter, it would be worth still far, far more than a quarter. Would be the point of counterfeiting with a metal that was worth cost way more than a quarter? So you go around and cheat payphones or something? They don't have payphones anymore. But
the prosecutor, get this, ridiculous. Okay? They said that what he did was a unique form of domestic terrorism, and quote unquote, he was trying to undermine the legitimate currency of the country. Okay, that's a direct quote from the prosecutor. Okay,
that's kind of true, right?
Well, except the fact that the legitimate currency of this country, I'd say it was to undermine the illegitimate currency of this country, and that would be true.
The country's doing a good job of undermining the currency of the country, too.
Yeah, they're doing just fine with that on their own. But literally, a unique form of domestic terrorism, like creating silver silver currency, is terrorism? Really?
Did the notes end up being worth anything, or did people just get stuck with them?
Well, that's an interesting question. They're maybe even more valuable as collector's items now.
Yeah, I have some.
And I would definitely hang on to them. There's a process now to try to get back the precious metals that were stolen.
And so your certificates for them if they were going to be got back. Right.
Well, there's been a process, and Bernard sent out this in his email newsletter. It's like, hey, if you have any of these, you know, fill out this paperwork, get it notarized, send it in, and they're going to, then you have a chance of actually getting your silver back.
It wasn't that anybody thought they were getting their silver back. It was really that by distributing the ones that you had, it was essentially a ticket into a class action lawsuit against the FBI or the Secret Service or whoever it was, right?
I don't think so. No. I think it's just like we took a bunch of stuff and we have a procedure to give it back if we know who the rightful owner is. And
no, I never got mine back.
Well, I filled out the paperwork. I photographed my warehouse receipts. And I had also mentioned that they owed me 30 Ron Paul copper rounds, these like silver, like copper coins with Ron Paul. And like I'd ordered 30 of them, and while they were waiting to process my order, they got raided and everything stolen. So those are going for like $25 on eBay, though, if you have them. So if I could get those, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I have a Ron Paul silver in the mix, and I filed the paperwork too. My understanding was that. At least I know that people did this, right? Like there were people who were like just sort of giving out $2 silver certificates so that there would be more names in the class action claim or what. No, I don't know if it was actually a class action lawsuit, but whatever the claim was, right?
You know, it's
because
easy,
by having a certificate that is a claim on property held by the Secret Service or whoever.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of confusing. I don't really expect anything to come out of it except, you know what? If I can just make them process additional paperwork for the lulls, I'll do it. Like, evidently they got hundreds and hundreds of these requests to get the stolen property back. So,
now, of course, we're talking about the money. What happened to Mr. Von Nauthaus?
Well, he was convicted in... I don't know. It was years ago, but they didn't sentence him.
I think
they did not sentence, or 2009. I think he was indicted in 2009. He was arrested 2009. He was convicted, but they waited years to sentence him. Okay, so they arrested him in 2009. He was convicted in 2011, and he was just sentenced 6 months ago. And to probation and 6 months of home confinement. I literally thought he was going to spend the rest of his life in prison. The prosecution was going for everything. They wanted to. I mean, he's a domestic terrorist, right? Like, you don't give home detention to a domestic terrorist, do you?
I hope not.
But anyway, he was just the other day, he completed his home detention. And he's semi-free now to go about his business, and he's still on probation. But this enables him to come to Porkfest, so we can talk to him and hear more about what he's been through. But I can't believe what he's endured for being such a pioneer. It really reminds me, to an extent, of Ross Ulbricht. What Ross Ulbricht, being the pioneer that he is and being so successful that he became a major threat to the establishment.
Yeah.
They go for the jugular. They definitely go for the jugular.
Yeah, but very different things happened to one as opposed to the other. Not to justify what the government did to Mr. Von Nauthaus, but he got off with a tap on the wrist. Particularly for being a domestic terrorist, where Ross Ulbricht got life in prison, really life. There is no parole in the federal system. It does not exist. And for being, well, from their point, for being a drug dealer.
Well, that's right. And, you know, for people that don't know who Ross Ulbricht is, Ross Ulbricht was recently convicted of being the mastermind behind the Silk Road, which was a wonderful free market that existed on the dark web that people could access basically mostly anonymously and conduct trade without interference from the government. So they thought, up to a limit, but it became so huge, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of goods were freely traded by consenting adults. And this is a big threat. This is definitely something that they could not tolerate. And they went after him with a huge stack of charges and calling him a kingpin, special kingpin charges that are only for like crime lords, basically for running a website. He wasn't even selling things on the website himself. Not what he was really accused of. I think he maybe had started
out. To go full circle, he was charged with selling a fungus on the website.
That's true. I think that was his first, like how he started the web. He started it. He grew a fungus and he sold it. He's like, hey, this is kind of cool. Maybe other people would want to use this. And next thing you know, it became this huge platform. And even though they put him in jail, the concept of this free marketplace on the dark web is completely out of the bag. There's like 50 copies now. There's no going back. There's nothing they can do to crush the idea. They can only try to crush a few souls that they can get their hands on.
I haven't heard that any have shut down since the news of Ross Ulbricht's final demise. I mean, he's going to die in a federal prison.
Organize a jailbreak. I don't know. Is that something we can talk about openly, or maybe we should talk about that in private?
Well, you might.
I think we can talk about it openly because we're not going to be the culprits if it happens, but I definitely think it would be a valuable thing for someone to do.
We should also note that in addition to...
That's just a metaphor, by the way.
Yeah, it's a metaphor. In addition to life in prison, do you know they fined him $183 million?
Is that how much they seized from him so they could just take it now?
I don't know how much they seized. I doubt they seized that much because I don't think he had it. But it's $183 million. So what is he supposed to like work that off in the commissary and jail? I mean,
a lot of license.
I have no idea.
Right there, I would say.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, fundamentally, the crime is the same, right? Bernard von Notthaus and Ross Ulbricht are both charged and convicted and persecuted on account of challenging the legitimacy of the existing power structure. I mean, that's the crime.
Exactly. And doing it really well.
Yeah.
That would be true.
So perhaps we should put together a GoFundMe to raise that $183 million.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Two.
Welcome back Freedom to Talk Beans. Show Plasmosis.
Infecting your brain with spongiform brain damage from a liberating fungus.
The talk show Plasmosis fungus.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Plasmosis is such a weird word. I don't know how they built that word, but it kind of sounds like plasma and it kind of sounds like osmosis. So I always imagine that it's like some sort of bombardment of radiation that like saturates your body, but it's not. It's a parasite.
It's like some sort of plasma moving from one side of a membrane to the other.
Maybe.
There it is.
I think they just make up these words when scientists come up with the names of animals. I think they just make it up.
Well, we just make up the definition, so that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was... We were talking about jailbreaks, and I think that it's probably illegal to talk about breaking people out of a federal jail.
Well, let's just say we're not going to tell anybody that they should do this, right? We're not actually planning jailbreaks.
But we this is a writer's room. We're discussing a work of fiction.
But there was a real jailbreak that was fun in Brazil, right, Jay?
It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, now this this is one of the best jailbreak stories I have ever read, and this was, I don't know, 6 months or a year ago in Brazil. Some women put on these, like, two women put on these sexy outfits, like, which are actually like sexy police outfits. They go into the jail, they've got like booze and stuff. They get everybody to drink this booze, and I think it's like laced with a sedative. They put everybody to sleep in the jail, and they bust everybody out.
Wild.
Which, you know, I'm thinking this is, you know, I don't have the number for the A-team to do jailbreaks that I might need, but I'm thinking these gals would be the ones to call if you were so inclined. They didn't hurt anybody.
That's like Black Widow status.
It's just so good, and you know, it exploits their weakness of the prison. You know, they're dudes, and they just couldn't resist. You know, a couple hot Brazilian women came in there in the right outfits. The spokesman for the prison said they found bottles of whiskey and a pair of provocative police themed costumes next to the handcuffed guards who were passed out.
What? Well, so the guards thought that they were police women.
Obviously.
If police uniforms actually look like this in Brazil, then that is a great place to have a police state.
But were these women caught, or is this a successful break?
Well, last I knew, it was partially successful. And at the time of this article, 15 prisoners were still out there, but I think several had been recaptured. So,
okay.
Which I think is normal on any jailbreak. There's always going to be people that get caught. But hey, 15 people still out. That's a huge success.
Yeah. Was it just a general break? They weren't like targeting anybody specific or anything.
You know, I don't know. I mean, they must have had a reason to go there. It's like a small city prison. So, who knows? But you know, kudos to these gutsy ladies.
I wonder if they'll be charged with impersonating an officer if they're caught.
well, what if they do? Did they let any murderers or rapists out or anything like that?
Oh, that's right. There might actually. Wait a minute. Yeah, you know, I forgot. Sometimes there are actual bad people in jail. I totally forgot about that.
Could be. Sometimes up to half of the people that are in there deserve to be there.
Really? That many?
Sometimes.
I totally. I didn't think
that's an amazing success rate. I'm not sure I believe it.
It's too efficient for government. Yes, I know. It is hard to believe.
Yeah, I just assume that everybody that's in there really shouldn't be there.
Well, you know, if it is half or less than half, then statistically speaking, you're better off letting people out at random, right?
Well, and you know what? And even let's just say they are a violent criminal in jail. That doesn't mean they're not a violent criminal anymore, and they could be preying on people in jail. At least people on the outside have the capability of defending themselves. That can be really hard in jail. So having some kind of violent monster in prison with all these innocent people is not exactly a good solution.
Not for the innocent people, it isn't.
Right.
That's an interesting question.
Like, although, if the federal government, though, they try to put all of their monsters, you know, in one place, and the white-collar criminals in another.
Well, where do they put guys that ran a website or made silver coins? Are those they have a maximum security place for those guys?
You know, you're talking about Ross Ulbricht, for example, in this one. From his history and everything, you would think that he would be in a real low security place. But I'd be willing to bet anything that he gets into something that's very high.
Of course, Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Talking to a talk radio show.
I think we need to pay closer attention to the clock on this one. I think we have missed every break.
I think that was
It's the plasmosis.
Talk show plasmosis.
Talking. Yeah, that's right.
It just distorts your sense of time.
Take a fiend aside and cure yourself.
I confess I was the one that talked into the going into the last break. It was completely my fault, and I had my fiend phone slider turned down too low, and I apologize. But we're back and came in with a lot of class with Davi.
Where'd we leave off? I don't remember where we were before.
I don't know
if
we were. We had just finished talking about the Brazilian escape, but I don't know if we. I don't think we were finished talking about the Ross Ulbricht case. And one thing that Jim, I think you sent me an email earlier about, and one issue that was kind of interesting was the notion, the idea that what's the difference when it comes time to get sentenced in a case like that. What's the difference between groveling to the judge or, I think you put it proudly, taking ownership of your accomplishments? And it was kind of, I thought, my impression of this was, if you decide to go to trial, you know, it's kind of hard to go back to groveling.
Why? That's when people do their groveling. Right.
No. You do your.
But the whole trial was groveling, from what I could tell, mostly from the lawyer who was just trying to appease the judge and trying to be this dutiful, obedient, lawyer. But I guess hindsight's 20/20, right? He got the maximum sentence and guilty on all charges. So. It's easy to look back and say, well, that strategy was wrong.
Well, no, but, everybody in federal court knows that you're going to get yourself a heck of a lot better deal if you get yourself a deal. And when I have my clients, I have to tell them, you know, we either are going to do the best we can for you, get you the best deal we can get you, or we're going to fight. And I usually tell them, if you fight... then, and you lose, they are going to hammer you so far into the ground, so get ready for it.
Right.
And then they can decide. I mean, that's the advice you have to give people. You have to tell them the truth. If it were me and I were Ross Ulbricht's attorney, I would be saying, you will probably get life in prison if you go. Otherwise, I can get you 20 years right now.
Whoa.
And you need to decide.
Man.
But the hard thing is to say, oh, I'm going to hang tough. I will never kiss their behinds. You know, I'm all the way.
And then
so
ask
you
for 20 years at the end.
And then you come in and grovel and admit, you know, what a horrible thing you've done and all of this. And I'm not criticizing that. If you go in to get the best deal you can, in other words, the least time that you can get, then. You really want to go for it, and once they made the decision to actually go to trial, that was gone. That was lost.
But what if he had done a slightly different strategy, and he walked into court and he told the jury, "I built a website, and started to make a moral argument for free markets, and explained to the jury why he's proud of this incredible free market experiment, and why the drug war is atrocious." Why it's immoral to regulate people's adult choices. You know, take ownership and say, yeah, I did it. I'm proud of doing it because it was the right thing to do, and I'm a good person. And even though they say these are crimes, perhaps you don't want to send me to jail for the rest of my life because I made a website. And put it out to the jury, person to person.
Those are things you can't, they won't let him... say that to the jury, though? I mean, first off, they won't let them tell the jury what the likely sentence is, so he can't say, don't send me to jail for the rest of my life. He can just say, don't convict me.
Right. Right? But they, you know what, but there's ways, and maybe, Randy, you could say, but I think there's ways to sort of get around that. It is challenging, and they don't want the jury to know how what the damage is going to be.
You could make sure that the jury... you would be able to convey to the jury that if they convict him, it's going to go very badly for him. Although, you know, the judge is not going to... Well, you can't say exactly what he's going to get because you don't even know. Because unlike some of the state systems and that, in the federal system, juries don't get to say how much time you get, which is kind of a nice thing about, you know, systems that have that. A jury can actually... say, well, since you're not allowed to tell them that they can nullify, except in maybe one or two places, I don't know, not in my state, and not in the federal system, certainly, you can't do that.
But what would be the penalty if he just blurted it out anyway? Like a contempt of court?
Him or his lawyer.
But what if he said it himself, right? Like, yeah, he's going to get some heat for it, but...
Well, if he says it, the prosecutor will... It depends on how bright the prosecutor is. If he's a dope, he'll get up and ask that the words that the defendant just spoke, please ask the court to instruct the jury to disregard, you know, which is so stupid.
Does that work? Do jurors have like an erase button? Like, okay, clear buffer, erase? Like,
more than half of the lawyers I know will actually do that. I've always thought it was just... the dumbest thing. I mean, that's like the Wizard of Oz, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I mean, if you hadn't noticed him before the judge told you not to notice him, well, you noticed him now.
But what do the jurors do? Are the jurors, they're trying to be like, okay, I have to forget that. Forget.
Like,
does
any juror ever sit in the jury box and say to himself, you know, I know for a fact that this guy is not guilty because the knife had the fingerprints of the other guy, but I was told to disregard that evidence, so I think maybe he does kind of look guilty. Like, does that ever happen?
I think they do that. I think they do because of this. We have a lot of conditioning for obedience to these authority figures, right? I mean, what does a juror know about the quote unquote justice system? Virtually nothing. That's all mysterious.
That it disrupts their life and holds them in a building against their will.
But what's the price of becoming an expert?
Yeah, well, they got a grand palace that they go into. There's a guy on literally like a throne in a special costume. Above him is a giant logo. He's adorned with flags, and people stand up, and they give him a title of nobility, and all this pomp and circumstance revolves around the guy. And the jurors are like, I don't know what to do. Who's going to tell me? I guess it's that guy. And they just obey whatever he says.
I mean, that guy. He's going to tell them what they have to do, and he'll say, if you find that the defendant did X, Y, and Z, you will find him guilty. And it doesn't matter if you think that's fair or not fair, according to the instructions. Obviously, you can say not guilty, but they don't know that.
But with your experience, Randy, how do you sum up the typical juror as being an independent thinker, as being an impartial judge of the facts, or somebody that's just going to go in there and do what they're told and try to get out as soon as possible?
Well, I don't know. I think most of the time they will do what they're told, but they won't always. I think most people on Fiends know that I was a prosecutor for 14 years. I'm not proud of it, but... I was nullified on at least a couple occasions, and maybe more than that, by a jury who I proved the case beyond the slightest doubt. I mean, there was one guy was a felony DWI that the only person who could have possibly said that he wasn't guilty with a straight face would have been his lawyer. I mean, I had him six ways from up and everything, and the jury came back not guilty. And after the trial... I walked out in the hallway. I was kind of stunned by it. I said, how is this possible? And I had a couple of the jurors actually walk up to me and sort of pat me on the back and say, don't feel bad. You did a good job, but we couldn't let that nice boy be convicted of a felony. And
nice.
Wow. Nice. You know, at the time I felt, you know, like, what's the point here? And another time that the same thing happened was, I live in Missouri and people have guns and weapons and it isn't a big deal, but we had a statute that said that you couldn't have a knife over 4 inches long, concealed, and having it under the seat in your car is considered concealed. And I ended up having to try a jury trial for felony unlawful use of a weapon for somebody that had a knife, and it didn't have a chance. Now, I'll admit, I fought this one a little bit and said, I don't think we should do this, you know. We should cut this to a misdemeanor and get rid of it. But I had to do it, so I did it, and the jury came back and said, nope, we're not going to convict, not guilty, because they didn't think it was a crime to do something that everybody in this state knows that you got the right to do, and that's carry a knife under your seat if you want to. And, you know, that's kind of now that one I didn't even feel bad about, because I went into it thinking, I don't like this case. And the jury came back, and apparently they had the same opinion I did.
Now, how did that affect your, like, your scorecard as a prosecutor? I'm sure you're tallying wins, and as part of your professional development, these things are important, right?
Oh, not that important. It was, I was in a small office. It was just me and one other guy. The boss that I was working for was the elected prosecutor. I was the assistant. And when I went back to him, he had had the same thing happen to him. And to his credit, after the second case had been lost, the same kind of case, he said, I don't think we're going to be filing unlawful use of a weapon for a knife anymore, at least unless somebody pulls it out and tries to get nasty with it.
Well, that is jury nullification in exactly. Reality. It's not just getting one guy off the hook. It's getting the people in authority to say, this isn't going to work. We're not doing it anymore.
Well, you know? A prosecutor will always, and I always did this, I didn't care what the law said. You know, if something was against the law, if I thought that the community standards would not support it. I never filed a case that I didn't think the community would convict on if I had to try it. I mean, you know, we weren't idiots. And to me, that always seemed just. I mean, I didn't like jury nullification after I made a decision that this should be filed. You know, I wanted to win the case, I guess. But you know, if I thought that a jury in my town would not like this case and didn't like this law, I wouldn't file it. No way would I file it. You shouldn't file it. A prosecutor, when you file a felony against somebody, you are wrecking their life. At least wrecking it for a year. And you shouldn't do that unless there's a good likelihood of prosecution, no matter what kind of case it is.
Isn't that what prosecutors thrive on, is ruining people's lives?
No.
Not you.
No, it makes you get out of the business eventually. At least
I think you had too much of a soul to be there.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Hey, this is Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends.
So, you know, aside from, like, whether or not you can tell the jury what your sentence is likely to be, or whether or not you can make a jury nullification argument, I think there's, like, a bigger issue, which is, why isn't the defense allowed to argue anything that they want? Like, the potential incarceration of an innocent man is on the line, or an innocent defendant of any gender is on the line. So, like, why can't they just say anything? Why do things get ruled out? Why do relevant pieces of information become prohibited to the jury? It's always strange.
Because it might work. Because it might help the defense.
Now, are you talking about arguments or evidence? Like, there's a lot of evidence that you're not allowed to put in, right?
Why not?
Well, let's say the police...
Like, why aren't you allowed to just throw the spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks?
Okay, so...
Because that's how they make charges.
They bust down your door without a warrant and get your drugs, and you come into court and you say, "Judge, you should suppress the evidence of the drugs because they didn't have a search warrant." The judge throws out the evidence and you go free. That's surely not. That's surely
that's,
the result.
That's the prosecution. I'm talking about the defense. I'm defaulting to the defense should have all of the leeway they need to make whatever argument they want.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, there is a. I think a lot of it has to do with judicial efficiency, so that.
I don't like the sound of that.
No. Wait, here's what they're doing.
Say it with a German accent, you know.
No, well, if like one of the things is that when you put on evidence in the case, or even make arguments, I guess, mostly with referring to evidence, it has to be relevant to the guilt of the defendant. So if you want to get up and put in the Chicago phone book, the judge is going to say, no, you're not going to do that. And it's kind of a no. We're not going to sit here and listen to the phone book, okay? Move on to your next witness.
Why don't we pull the jury? Why don't we let the jury decide whether or not they want to listen to the phone book?
That'd probably be good, because they wouldn't want to listen to the phone book either.
Right, but they're adults. They're rational actors. Like, they should be able to hear something that is tangentially related to the case and decide whether or not it affects their decision.
Like hearsay, for example. Like
sure.
Somebody gets up and says, "Hey, I heard some guy say that he did it," or "I heard some guy say sure. that he didn't do it," or whatever.
And then the prosecutor says, "Objection, hearsay." And then the judge says, "Noted. Hey, jury, by the way, that was hearsay. Go on."
Well, they do throw it out. Well, the reason they don't.
No, I'm saying don't throw it out. Just tell the jury it's hearsay, so everybody knows. Full disclosure: this is hearsay. And let them throw it in. Let the defense use it if they want the jury to consider it.
Well, I'd do it, but that would not be efficient.
Go ahead. I've heard the hearsay argument used, for instance, during Larkin Rose's trial for disagreeing with the IRS. They stole everything on his computer and used it as evidence against him. He could not use anything, any of those emails that they stole, in his defense, because that would be hearsay.
That's a hearsay. That's exception to the hearsay
rule. But they get to use it. They could use anything that they seized because they had a warrant and took his computer. He couldn't
use. Why is it hearsay if it's his email?
That's the way that. But see, what we have to realize is
they're saying that he said it. They're saying here's something that Larkin Rose said, and that is hearsay. But it goes in because there's an exception. Anything the defendant says can always be put into evidence. He doesn't get the benefit of hearsay. Probably the reason for that is if he said it and he's sitting there, he can always get up at the when it comes his turn and tell the jury his side of the story. So
no, absolutely not. In fact, the entire week was spent sending the jury out of the room to discuss why they couldn't hear what he wanted to say. The entire week was spent doing
that. I think you got to let hearsay go in all the time. Because anytime you're telling a story that involves hearsay, you're not necessarily saying Larkin Rose said this. You're saying, "Hey, I heard James Babb say this about Larkin Rose."
Yeah.
Like, that is still a wit. That is a first-hand account. All hearsay is a first-hand account.
Well, and
it's just
in
a
his
matter
case,
of what you're accounting.
he was on trial for what he believed, for failure to file. So that was actually really
relevant. The legitimacy of government. It's the same crime as Bernard von Nothausen. It's the same crime as Ross Ulbricht.
That would clog the system, which may be what we're looking for. Clog the system to a dead stop. There would be no trials.
Right. So, hey, if you're on a jury and they're keeping you in the dark, just say not guilty.
Down with judicial efficiency.
Now that's words to take home with you. Just say not guilty.
Not guilty.
If it stinks, not guilty.
Yeah.
Worms.
Well, thanks, guys. It's been a great show.
Hey, yeah.
Great
My pleasure.
You guys.
My honor. Jim, good to be on with you. First time.
Likewise.
Let's do it again.
Let's do it.
See y'all at Pork Fest.
And if you get an uncontrollable urge to climb a tree and explode fungal spores all over everyone, just to quit.